page 26. A student shall reverently salute that teacher from whom he receives knowledge, referring to worldly affairs, to the Veda, or to Brahman. A Brahmana who completely governs himself, though he knows the Savitri only, is better than he who knows the three Vedas but does not control himself, eats all sorts of food, and sells all sorts of goods. So as I mentioned before, is that in connection with what's the wording, then we see here it means that someone who is scholarly but doesn't have the character. Because later it'll talk about someone who scholarly has the character, but if something goes wrong, then the power of the, you know, the devotional process of the study of the scriptures is so powerful that, you know, one remains still in a saintly position. One must not sit down on a couch or a seat which the superior occupies, and he who occupies a couch or seat shall rise to meet a superior and after salute him. Right, so in other words, sitting, when someone of superior nature comes, then one will rise, then offer obeisances. One doesn't kind of like fall out of the seat onto the floor. You know, whatever's one's seat, one stands up, then one offers obeisances, right? And the reason for that is the vital airs of a young man mount upwards to leave the body when an elder approaches, but by rising to meet him and saluting, he recovers them. Right? In other words, the life airs just move up because they stand up. So if you stand up, then you catch them. But if you don't, then they leave the body. So it'll weaken the... Right? So it's not just practical, you know, so... Just going, Vanchas Prabhu, that somehow or another doesn't quite do it, right? He who habitually salutes and constantly pays reverence to the aged attains an increase of four things, namely length of life, knowledge, fame, and strength, right? So these are all popular. Length of life, you know, the proper health, the strength, their knowledge, everyone's looking for this knowledge, everyone wants to be famous. So simply by respecting elders, this comes like that. You don't respect, it won't come. Not only if you don't respect, no one will respect you. Because something can only be reciprocated what you do, right? You give respect to seniors, juniors will respect you. You don't respect your seniors, juniors won't respect you. It's simple. Manner of salutation. A Brahmin who greets an elder must pronounce his name. So in other words, when you meet, then you introduce yourself. That's the point. If they don't know you, you introduce who you are. And then that works nicely. So then you must be respectful, you know, properly say, use whatever is the proper terms, like that. So all other, like, how you say, female relatives and like this, one deals with them as towards one's own mother, but the mother is still more respectful than them, your own mother, right? Means how you deal with her must be more intimate, right? In other words, the others will be formal, you'll give the respect of a senior lady, but for your own mother, it'll have that plus more, so it'll have that intimacy. Like that. A maternal aunt, the wife of a maternal uncle, a mother-in-law, a paternal aunt must be honored like the wife of one's teacher. They are all equal to the wife of one's teacher. The feet of the wife of one's brother, if she be of the same caste, must be respectfully touched every day, but the feet of wives of other paternal and maternal relatives only on one's return from a journey. Right? In other words, if they're more close, like that, more intimate, like, you know, because they're sister-in-laws, but an aunt's, they're not. They're not relatives, technically. Means they're related, but they're not. Does that make sense? Do you have a differentiation like that? You know, you have your brother, his wife is a sister-in-law, right? But then you have a cousin, their wife is not your cousin. Does that make sense? So in other words, those who are directly relatives, then they'll be respected every day if they're senior. But if they're not technically relatives, means they're the relative of your relative, then when you've come from a distance, when you first meet them, then you offer that respect. After that, you just deal, you know, pleasantly. Does that make sense? towards a sister of one's father and of one's mother, and towards one's own elder sister, one must behave as towards one's mother. But the mother is more venerable than they. Right? So the sister of the father, so direct aunt of either mother and father, they're dealt with as the mother, right? But still the mother's something superior, right? So no one, one doesn't put them in that position, they should not try to take that position. Okay, now, respectful and social dealings, right? So that was female relatives and just general. Then fellow citizens are called friends and equals, though they be 10 years older than the other, right? So just general people within 10 years, you don't call your equals. You don't have to worry, you know, who's senior, who's junior, and stuff like that. By age, right? Does that make sense? Where were we? Okay. Men practicing the same fine art, though you'd be a 5 years, right? So if you have two musicians, then 5 years difference is considered equal. But beyond that, then 5 years is a long time in an art. You definitely will be better than the other person by a 5 year gap. But 5 years is your equal. Then Shrotriyas, learned men, though 3 years intervene between the age, right? So if you have those who are scholarly and like that, then 3 years would be considered, because then so much more is gained, right? Does that make sense? The idea is on what creates seniority, like that. So the time is shorter for higher levels of things, right? But blood relations only if the difference of age be very small, right? Right. So then, yeah. Right. Does that make sense? So it means very small. So even if they're like 1 year difference older, then depending upon how it is in the mood, then they may be senior. You know, just like when Krishna comes and offers obeisance, comes and meets the Pandavas, then he'll touch the feet of Yudhishthir and Bhima. Right. Arjuna, he'll embrace them, but Nakula and Sahadev, then they'll touch Krishna's feet. Now, there you're only dealing in Yudhishthira's a year older than Bhima, he's a year older than Arjuna, they're a year older than the. So you're only dealing in 1 year differences there, right? But they're dealing with each other there. So relatives, blood relatives, then just a little bit of difference, then that makes a difference. Just like, you say you have two twins, twin brothers, and they're born. So according to the Western tradition, who's born first is the elder, even though you're talking maybe 15 minutes here. But he's the senior. He inherits everything. He gets everything like that. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is in blood relatives, the distance is very small, like that. Yes? Initiation, then you would definitely make a difference in generation, like that. Within, then I would give it a little bit of time. You know, I would here work on the Shrotriya one, like that. So, in other words, if someone's Prabhupada's disciple, they're definitely senior to someone who's in the next generation. But if someone's the generation after that, then they're, does that make sense? So that would be automatic. Then within, then I would take it within, you know, a few years like that. But there's, see, because we're going to come into other, this is just age-wise, right? Now we're going to come in, after this, we're going to deal with other aspects. Then you have to add all that together. That's why respect, you need to, you know, understand it, okay? It'll be a little more clear. Okay, between a Brahmin, okay, know that a Brahmin of 10 years of age, right, and a Kshatriya of 100 years stand to each other in the relation of father and son, right? Makes sense? Between those two, the Brahmin is the father. Does that make sense? So in other words, knowledge trumps age or other material skills, hands down. There's no question. So 10-year-old Brahmin will be dealt with, because it will say later that a 90-year-old man, no matter what varna he is automatically respected by everybody. You know, because when you hit that age, you've seen everything and kind of like, you're very detached at that point. So their view of the world is very, you know, very, how you say, useful. They give some direction, some information, because there's no more passion. They're not going to be. There's no issues. They don't care about anything anymore for themselves. So they'll just, if they give you some direction, some knowledge, it will be generally be very, very balanced, right? So therefore, no matter what, they're respectable. So here it's saying a kshatriya of 100 years. So that means even more than that. So that would put him in such a respectable position, because people don't generally live more than 100 years, right? Or in any case, 100 is, here it's you get to 100 years and you die. In the other age, you get to 100 years and you stay like that for another 1,000 or 10,000 years, right? So, so then, here it's the Brahmin, because of knowledge, is the senior. It's just the way it is, right? Does that make sense? So it's just, it's not a matter of, so that's why the thing, when we put administration on the top, it won't work. The Brahminical culture, the Brahminical position is always superior, like that. Titles of respect. So now here are different ways of doing, because that was by age. So it was showing age, but then it was showing, but still that aspect, age is not the superior, because that's much of the time how we work, like that. Wealth. Kindred, that means relationship. Age, the due performance of rites, and fifthly, sacred learning are the titles to respect. But each later named cause is more weighty than the preceding ones. So if someone has wealth, they're to be respected. Like a wealthy man visits the temple, you respect him, you deal properly, just because he has wealth. You can say, no, but it's all Maya and this. No, but you're supposed to respect him. That's the thing. Because the point, if you don't respect him, he's not going to respect you. He doesn't respect you. He won't give you any donations, right? So you have to respect. It's wealth is one of Krishna's opulences, right? So it must be respected. So kindred, then relationship, the family relationship. So that's more important than wealth, right? Age is more important than the relationship, because you may have the relationship, but the age element is also there, right? Then due performance of rites means who has done what kind of sacrifice. Right, so if you have someone who's, let's say, done book distribution for the last 30 years, that trumps, you know, someone doing something else, generally speaking. You know, they would have to be a sannyasi or a GBC or, you know, something serious to equal that. Or they've been a temple president for so long, or they've done something very serious. That's always more than someone who hasn't, right? That's where probably gets the point. First do what they do, then you can complain. If you can't do what they do, you know, anybody can make a complaint like that. Yeah. Okay. And then fifthly, sacred learning, right? So then those who know the Shastra have knowledge, or those who have, especially if they have realization, that's always considered, you know, that's the highest. What man of the three highest caste possesses most of those five, both in number and degree, that man is worthy of honor amongst them. And so also a shudra who has entered the 10th decade of his life, right? So 90 years and above, right? So these things, wealth, kindred, age, performance of rites, and knowledge. So who has more of numbers of those, and who has more depth in each one of those? That you have to judge. Then you can understand who's senior. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the new bhakta may not be considering that in the morning when he takes the lamp around. He's only going to do age, or, you know, he'll throw in maybe the ashram or sometimes the position, and, you know, like that. You know, they do not bad, but still, that's not the ideal method. Then making way for others. So based on also the respect, and also when you're when you're moving. Way must be made for a man in a carriage, for one who is above 90 years old, for one diseased, for the carrier of a burden, for a woman, for a snataka, for the king, and for a bridegroom. Right. So in other words, all these, if you bump into them on the road, you give way to them. Right? Like that. The man in the carriage, he's bigger than you. You don't make way, you get run over, right? That's pretty direct, right? Plus, he's in a carriage, he does think himself more important, right? And so this gives rise to the Indian pecking order, you know, if you're walking, you know, you move out of the way for everyone. Then the bicycle's more than you, then better than that is the rickshaw, better than that is the rickshaw that has an engine motor on it, motorized rickshaw, then your auto rickshaws, then your small cars, then your big cars, then small trucks, big trucks, and then there's the bus, right? Bus doesn't care for anybody, right? So, like that. So that's it. That comes from there. So it is Vedic. You think it's weird, but no, it's actually Vedic, right? For one who's above 90 years old, naturally, one, they're respectful, and it's not easy for them to move. So it's easy for you to move, you know, like that. One who's diseased, so they'll have difficulty moving. You know, that would include someone in a wheelchair or in some way handicapped. For the carrier of a burden, even though he's a shudra, he's carrying something big on his head, still, for him to have to move is very inefficient. He's doing this work for someone else, so you move out of the way. You know, does that make sense? In other words, even though you're more respectful than the person who you're bumping into, you still move, right? This is just the practical thing. For a woman, then everybody moves like that, because women are always in their own category. Right, all these different things that we're saying, that's within the men's world, right? Then you can have the same thing within the world, women's world. But when it's between the men and the women's world, then the women are always respected. Does that make sense? It's just generic. Then within the women's world, they'll apply these things, and then who's senior and junior then? Does that make sense? Right? There's a difference. Just like you have the rule that the eldest child gets married before the younger child, right? But that's among the boys or among the girls. It's not that until the oldest son gets married, the daughters can't get married. No, the daughters get married when they get married, then boys get married when they get married. But in order of within their gender. Does that make sense? Like that. So you see is here is that there's no, the same thing is applied, but it's not applied that equally, right? Yes. Technically should, but at the same time as the king is also one of the ones. Now, that's coming up next. It means we're talking about if you're not one of these, then you would give away to them, right? Like that. Okay. Then a snataka. Snataka means a graduated Brahmin. So that means he has his knowledge, he is practicing it, you know, so he would be what you'd call a brahmana, right? Because when someone, even though they're a brahmana and they're a brahmachari, they're generally not called a brahmana, they're called a brahmachari. So they could be a brahman, kshatriya, or vaishya, but they're brahmacharis. When they graduate, then you have a brahman, kshatriya, or vaishya. Right? So then when they graduate, here a snataka would mean a graduated brahman. Like that. So he would be also respect. Then the king. Right, so naturally you'd move for the king because the king generally comes with the whole retinue, and unless you want to be run over, then that's also very practical, right? Plus, you know, that respect for the king because the king is managing everything, and then for a bridegroom because for that day he is the king, right? You know, the next day you don't have to move at all, but that day you have to move. That's his day, right? You know, so that you move out of the way. You know, because the bharat means it comes. We want to say, what about the bride? But she's only inside the compound. So, of course, everyone's going to move because she's a woman, right? But we're talking about the boy comes from his village with his party and is coming down the road to go for the marriage. So when that what bridegroom's party comes, you move out of the way for them. Like that. You don't give them trouble, right? They're already oppressed by their illusion enough, right? You know, so don't... You know, that's as good as it gets, so leave it alone for that day. Right? So among all those, right? So this is your point. Among all those, if they meet at one time, right? They all happen to converge at one time. A snataka and the king must be most honored. And if the king and a snataka meet, the latter receives respect from the king. Right? Notice that they always kind of switch it because... Generally, we'll put it that the king, but they always do it in such a funny way. The wording is such a way, poetic way, that it goes one way and then switches. So in other words, it's still going to be the Brahman. So then you would look at it, what would be there, you know? Like that. It means if the woman was just a woman, and then the king, of course, you know, then the woman would move for the king or the snataka, the bridegroom, the carrier of a burden, like that. One, she would move for these. But if the woman happened to be nobility, and then there was the king would move for, you know, if it's his mother or aunt or someone like that, or someone senior, or another kingdom that's considered more senior, he'd move for them. But that's generally we're generally speaking on a road, but this would be only, that would happen if they're inside the palace and stuff like that. And then because she's a woman, he would move anyway. Does that make sense? You know, and then between someone who's carrying a burden and someone who's 90 years old and one who's diseased, it means whoever could easily move would move, right? All three of these would be very hard to move. The 90-year-old, the diseased person, carrier of a burden. So whoever is actually most burdened by their condition, they would be the one not to move. Does that make sense? You're in a wheelchair and you can move easier than the guy carrying the burden, you move. Right, but he's carrying a burden. He can move easier than you. Then does that make sense? Like that. The idea is, what will properly respect the position that the person's in. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Position of the acharya. Right. The preceptor who initiates a pupil and teaches him the Veda. They call that Brahmana who initiates a pupil and teaches him the Veda, together with the Kalpa and the Rahasyas, the preceptor, Acharya of the latter. Right, so teaches them the Veda along with Kalpa, which is the rituals, how you apply it, and the Rahasyas means the hidden portions or the element of, you know, how Krishna in it, how to connect it to Krishna. Right, so for some it's the metaphysics, because that's all the higher they get. But if they get into actual Krishna consciousness, means that. So if someone teaches you the Veda but doesn't teach you the Kalpa and the Rahasyas, they're not Acharya. They're a teacher. Like before, it mentions you have to respect your teacher. Because it said the teachers of those teaching worldly affairs to the Veda and to the Brahman. Right? So Brahman would be Rahasya. Right? So if someone's just teaching worldly affairs, then that would be lower than someone who's teaching the Veda, right? But of those who are teaching the Veda, the one who teach you how to apply it in your life and how to see Krishna consciousness through that knowledge in your life, that would be the Acharya, right? That's the meaning. And amazingly enough, note, there was no word in there that said Uttamadhikari, Nityasiddha, or anything else. That make sense? Just for reference. Because people like to, according to the Nyayak, it means the rule of Nyaya, which is one of the various kinds of fallacies. It's called chala, is that you take a different interpretation of the word because you didn't make it specific. Does that make sense? The example is given. The boy, you say, oh, this boy just bought a new blanket. He has a new blanket, right? And so the word for new is nava, but also nava can mean nine. And then you say, what do you mean? He doesn't have nine blankets. He only has one blanket. That's chala. You understand? So because someone will say acharya means, you know, pure unalloyed devotee, but that's not what it says. So that's chala. They're changing the meaning. Acharya means someone who's teaching you the Veda, teaching you how to live it in your life and practice it in your life. That's what it means. So that could be anyone. You understand? It doesn't have to be a Diksha Guru, it could be Siksha Guru, it could be, you know, anybody who is able to give that to you. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, this idea that you cannot use the term acharya, that's for people who don't actually know what acharya means. Does that make sense? It's a standard word. Prabhupada used it. Everybody uses it like that. Okay. Okay, sub-teacher. Now teachers below this. But he who for his livelihood teaches a portion only of the Veda, or also the Angas of the Veda, is called a sub-teacher, Upadhyaya. Right. So here we're saying, yeah. So someone who teaches a portion of the Veda, a certain aspect of it, and or a part of the Veda means a practical application. So they might teach kalpa, but they only teach kalpa. They're not teaching you the Veda. They're not teaching you the philosophy, right? They're teaching you astronomy, astrology, mathematics, grammar. How you say the rituals like this? Then they'd be a sub-teacher, right? Purana, any of these different branches that may be there, right? Music, dance. They're sub-teachers because they're doing that for their living, and that's what they're doing, right? That Brahman who performs, so that's the Upadhyaya. So we now said the Acharya, now the Upadhyaya, now the family guru. That Brahman who performs in accordance with the rules of the Veda, the rites, the Garbhadana, and so forth, and gives food to the child is called the guru, the venerable one. Right? So that's the family guru. He's the one who takes care of all the rituals for the family. Right? How much if he's teaching you other things or not, that's added on to it. Does that make sense? These definitions define the position. Then if you add something to that, it increases it. Like before, we have respect. You have each one of these, but if you combine them, someone's more respectful. So if they are the Acharya and the family guru, or the Acharya and the sub-teacher, or the sub-teacher and the family guru, you know, so it starts to add on to that. So does that make sense? The officiating priest. He who, being duly chosen for the purpose, performs sacrifices for another man is called his officiating priest. Right? So sometimes they're also called acharya, but when that ritual is over, then his position as the acharya, as the guru, is also finished. Then he's just a Brahman to be respected as a Brahman. Right? Okay, then, yeah. The teacher is the most venerable father. Yeah. Something in our nose. That man who truthfully fills both his ears with the Veda, the pupil shall consider his father and mother. He must never offend him, right? So that man means the acharya, someone who's teaching like that. Right? Both his ears with the Veda. That would indicate that full, right? He's taught him fully in the Veda and how to deal with it. The teacher, acharya, is 10 times more venerable than a sub-teacher, right, an upadhyaya. Of him who gives natural birth and him who gives the knowledge of the Veda, the giver of the Veda is the more venerable father. For the birth of the sake of the Veda ensures eternal rewards, both in this life and after death. Let him consider that he received a mere animal existence when his parents begat him through mutual affection and when he was born from the womb of his mother. But that birth which a teacher acquainted with the whole Veda in accordance with the law procures for him through the Savitri is real, exempt from age and death. The pupil must know that the man who benefits him by instruction in the Veda, be it little or much, is called in these institutes his guru, in consequence of that benefit conferred by instruction in the Veda. Right. So that means anybody who's giving. So he's guru. So he's gone from the position of the acharya to anybody who's teaching you anything connected. So even an upadhyaya or the family, someone who's doing anything, their position is guru. So all these four, right? That Brahman who is the giver of birth for the sake of the Veda and teaches the prescribed duties becomes by law the father of an aged man, even though he himself be a child, right? So the guru may be young, but he's teaching old, right? How would this mean? Okay, one will say, oh, but we are devotees, we don't care about these things. What's interesting is that in Vrindavan, means I'm talking about the eternal pastimes, Maru Mangal, right, is basically the same age as Krishna, they're friends. But when it comes to some discussion on, you know, some social or religious matter, then these elder gopis, they approach Maru Mangal and ask him for direction. right? They're elderly women, married with children, you know, senior members of the community, but they're asking this child for direction. Why? Because he's a Brahmin. Does that make sense? Otherwise, how would this pastime work? Does that make sense? So then he'll tell, oh, Radharani needs to do this worship of the sun god like that. And so many different things are there. So then Jatila will try to make the arrangements, but she needs a priest. So now because Madhu Mangal's made the arrangements, so he'll tell Krishna, so Krishna will come dressed as a priest. So then Krishna gets to be the priest for Radharani in front of Jatila, you know, doing the Surya Puja. Right, but he's dressed up, so Jatila doesn't know who she is. She's really happy she's got such a nice Brahmin to do the puja and all that, and so she doesn't understand it's Krishna, you know. So like this, and these things are going on. So, but this wouldn't work unless the principle that the Brahmin, no matter what his age, is respected by the others, no matter what their age is, right? Because otherwise, we'll come across to it that age, simply age is a consideration, that is the consideration for Shudras, right? Brahmins, it's knowledge, Kshatriyas, it's influence, Vaishyas, it's wealth, and Shudras, it's age. Because by age, you become better at what you're doing, right? If you have more money, means you're a better Vaishya. If you have more influence, you're a better Kshatriya. And if you have more knowledge, you're a better Brahmin. You understand? So simply because of age, that's for Shudras. Like that. Yes.
Is 10 times more venerable than a sub teacher. How in practice it is seen?
Means one's respectful to the sub teacher, and depending upon the occasion or stuff like that. But the acharya, then it may be more, in, you know, going to the point of worship. But the sub teacher, that's not necessary. You know, in other words, I'm not sure if it'll come across here, if it's in these other verses that we've adjusted. But basically, the acharya is 10 times more respected than the father, right? And he's 10 times more respected than the upadhyaya. So the upadhyaya is similar to the father, or even the father can be more respected than the upadhyaya. Because it would be according to your means and the situation, like that, you know. So that would be the. Yes.
Senior god brothers.
Senior god brothers, how senior and how god brother? God brother meaning, god brother,
yes.
Or, yes. So. Then they're respected like someone senior, you know, just like the family members we were saying there. So you respect them. Does that make sense? You want to know how many flowers in the garland or something? Then, well, he's only this much, so we got to take out 3 flowers here, you know, like that. And that garland is too new for him. You give him the older one because he's not as that. You know what I'm saying? There is that element of expression. Remember, respect is an expression. So the ritual doesn't define the expression. The ritual is only a medium. So depending upon the situation and what's available, that's what's done. Right? So it's just, you may be respectful in that the way you let them go first, or you know, some other consideration, or you speak nicely to them, you know, or something like that. Does that make sense? But at another time, it may be you're having a big festival, so you might give them a better place to sit. You know, it just depends on the occasion. So you would judge it accordingly. Does that make sense? So don't try to quantify it by the ritual, because the ritual changes according to the situation, because the ritual is only a medium to express respect. It's not that the ritual is done, that is the respect. No, that's the medium of the respect.
That's just what it's
sometimes say that very senior godbrother is almost on the level of spiritual master.
They're on the level of like the father, but like the spiritual master if they represent. But just because they're older doesn't mean, so what do you mean by older? You know what I'm saying? Okay, but how much older is that? You know what I'm saying? These days it can be more, but like with Prabhupada's disciples, you have an 11-year gap. But it means a lot. You know, those who are initiated before 70, you know, or at least like 60, 66, 69, they're kind of in one category because the experience and their closeness with Prabhupada. You know, that personal exchange. You know, if you start from 70 to like 72, then it's kind of in the middle there. Then 73, 75, like that, or even up like that. And then 77, 677 means they were initiated, but they may not have had any interaction with Prabhupada. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, here, but now you can get, you know, 20 years or, you know, 30 years and... It means we've given you the ideas here. You have to fill in the dots, right? Otherwise, then you have to give a very specific example if you want a very specific answer. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because that's the idea, is that you can't give a definition for every situation. You can only give the formulas by which you calculate what would be appropriate, right? Because the situations are unlimited. Now here's giving an example. Yes.
There is this phenomenon of familiarity breeds contempt.
Yes.
That when you associate with people regularly, you tend to...
But that's because there's no ritualization of respect. You know what I'm saying? There is no... Means, okay, let us say the man is there and his father-in-law visits. What's the ritual that separates him from the father-in-law? In the Western tradition. You know, maybe sir, but that's it. You know, and much of the time now in the modern context, then no one really does that or likes that. So, you know, you call him Joe. So what is there? But in the Vedic thing is every day they would be respected. In the morning you get up, you go, touch the feet, do something. So it would always put that position there. That's why the rituals are important, because it maintains relationships. We think they get in the way of relationships. No, they actually establish relationships. Like that. Because one must remember that, now let us say we went into nobility. Would there be proper things of respect? Right? There'd be different seats, there'd be different things. So there'd be something very obvious, the differences, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Now let's say you have a revolution by the masses, right? Who goes? Who do you get rid of? The nobility. Okay, so for your common person, there is no difference, right? You're covered in as much cow dung as he is, right? So how do you tell the difference, right? Because before it was, they knew this person's nobility because he's not covered by any cow dung. So that must be he's some nobility. But if everybody's covered from head to foot with cow dung, how do you tell the difference? You understand? So the problem is this element is not a difficulty in the, you know, your Asian cultures, because they already have these things in place. But in the Western, what likes to be practical and streamline everything, and fortunately also streamline anything that would make a relationship work, right? Because what is the central position of the Western culture is economics, right? Who is complaining? The common person wasn't complaining. They were not happy, but they weren't complaining, right? The bourgeois was complaining. The bourgeois means those people who are the you know, making money, who happen to make now because of the prosperity, of, you know, afforded by the nobility, that they had enough money that they were as, you know, basically as wealthy as much of the nobility. You know, not the king, of course, but everybody else. So then they wanted to have as much influence as the nobility, right? But they don't have the character, right? They're in that social position because of money, not because of character, right? So they get rid of the people with character, so all it leaves is money. And so the point is, if you have money, you're on top. No money, you're not on top. Simple, right? So the problem comes is then everybody becomes their shudras, right? So before there was common, you had common people, but they were common people for Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. But now everybody's basically shudras for Vaishyas, you know, if not directly, indirectly, right? It means you may be a nurse, you know, so you're a shudra for a doctor who's a Brahmin, but that Brahmin is working for the hospital that's run by Vaishyas. You know, so it ends up eventually everybody's, you know. So when they say, you know, how you say, Kalo Shudra Sambhava, means you're born a Shudra, and if the Vaishyas can manage it, you'll stay one also. You know, so it's just, does that make sense? Yes.
He was explaining them that they were not satisfied again and again. So how to understand this relationship that it seems like although they're very juniors, but it looks like they're going to be blaming Yudhishthira even in direct words in speaking with them. Like, you know, it's your fault, you play dice and so on.
Yeah. So you're dealing there with the element of intimacy. Right? So now they're placing themselves in the, means they're not doing anything outside of that, right? Are they saying, you know, you played dice, so, you know, staying in the forest is your business, we're out of here, you know, we're going to the Bahamas, you know, so, you know, they're not doing that, right? So they're there, they're still subservient too, but because they're, you know, the family members and the intimacy, they're in the feminine position. Right, so Yudhishthira's in the masculine position, so he has to take care of things according to their need. Right, so now this perspective and emotional situation has come up, so he has to deal with it. So that's the thing in the Vedas; it's always balanced. Because we'll look at it here is that, you know, okay, here's the respect, and so that's nice. It's this one-way thing, but it doesn't. Nothing works. It's always balanced. As much as there is that authority, there is that much responsibility. The modern thing is authority, no responsibility. Right? Like this, you know, it's like, you know, the guy's in charge, so then therefore everyone has to pay tax. Now, whether they have the facility to pay tax, whether, you know, the country is protected so that they can make the money or farm to pay tax, that he doesn't care. He's in charge, they pay tax. That's the cause of revolution. Right? But we see, you know, as it goes, is that if it's been a good year farming, then he can take the full amount of tax. But if it's been a bad year, let's say it wasn't raining, so the crop was less or failed, then he may take no tax or very little tax. He'll adjust according to the situation. Like that. So this concept of that one has authority and one is not creating the environment in which people can follow it. In other words, you make a rule, you also have to make the environment in which the rule can be followed. Right? You know, does that make sense? If you don't, technically your rule, one, has no meaning. And two, it would be actually unlawful for you to try to enforce it. Does that make sense? Because the two go together. How much authority? That much responsibility. You don't take the responsibility, you shouldn't have the authority. It's that simple. Like that. Because it says administration is protection. So if you're not protecting those under you, you technically have no authority over them. If you do, then you can try it, like Kartavirya Arjuna did. Didn't work out good for him. Or the other Kshatriyas that tried the same thing. Or for Vena. These are the examples. And you can't then at this point throw in, you know, devotional. No, because you can't go against the Vedas and say it's devotional. You know what I'm saying? Not when it bothers someone else. You know, you want to be out in the forest and do what you want? Okay. You know what I'm saying? Your personal life, that's another thing. Keep it to yourself. But when it comes to it, you can't say, oh, I'm the administrator, so we're in charge. No, but if you do like this, then you have to run administration this way. That's what the Shastra says. No, but we're devotees, we're above the rules. But if you're above the rules, we're above the administrative rules also. You know what I'm saying? We can't use this as tricky. This is faulty logic. Does that make sense? So the point is they're dependent upon him, therefore it's his business to make them satisfied with his... He can't just say, well, I'm the older brother and just you have to listen and that's it. That's not going to work. That's nonsense. That's shirking your responsibility. He is responsible to make them satisfied with the position now they're in because of his choices. That's his business. It's not, well, it's up to them or... Oh, they're, what do you call it? Disgruntled, or what do you call it? What was that one? Yeah, no, it's just, there's a term for it. At least it used to be used before. It may not be used now, but someone who's dissatisfied, like that. Does that make sense? So it's all these things. They just play with words. They play with, just use tricky words because... You know, that one I said where you're using the, you say, oh, we're devotees. But what does that mean? That could support either side. So that's called jalpa. You just, all you're trying to do is win the argument. You don't care if what you say means anything, as long as it wins, that's all. So you'll see that these are used a lot, jalpa and chala. You know, where they say anything, that jalpa supports both sides. Right? So this win-win. That's jalpa. Right? If it's practical, yes. But if it's just talk, it's jalpa. Right? And if you change the meaning, that's chala. Right? And then you can also say things that have nothing to do with each other. So these are all logical things that you'll find in discussions, right? Because you guys go to a lot of meetings, you hear a lot of discussions, so these are things that are used. People try to use them all the time. Yes?
I understand there is the position and there is the quality of this person who takes this position.
Yes.
And how to deal with the person in position when the quality is
not there? When the quality is not there. For us, if we're junior to them, if we do what we're supposed to do, what they're asking us to do is within the realm scope of our duty, and we do it, doesn't matter what their position or their qualities are, we'll get the benefit, right? If, due to their lack of qualities, they're asking us to do something that is outside of our duty, we're not obliged to do it. Like that. They may not appreciate that, but that's the reality. Right? In other words, they can only ask you to do something that's within the scope of their and your duty. They can't ask you. Just like you have the thing of, you know, the famous one, Kshatriyas, you know, if a woman approaches them, then they have to, you know, how you say, be intimate with them. But that's only if they're a woman of standard. You know what I'm saying? If a Kshatriya woman approaches them, then we were discussing. But if a Shudra approached them, then there's no obligation at all, zero. Right? Because that was one of the questions when Arjuna came back from Dwarka, and he was so sad. He says, so were you approached by a woman who was not of, you know, standard? You know, that was one of the things he said. You know, you were unable to help someone who approached you for, you know, some shelter or, you know. So one of them, he said, was that. So we just take it just means any woman. No, it doesn't mean that. It means there's obligation. It means means if you're challenged to something, just because it's a challenge, you know, like a kshatriya always accepts the challenge, but means he always accepts a valid challenge. If it's not a valid challenge, he doesn't have to accept it, right? Duryodhana wants this gambling match. Yudhishthir doesn't have to accept because it's not valid. But Dhritarashtra has invited him, so he's a senior, so he's accepted. Then when he gets there in the gambling match, Duryodhana is not going to throw the dice himself. He has a professional gambler throw the dice for him. Yudhishthir doesn't have to accept that. But Dhritarashtra approves. That's the reason he's following. But if Dhritarashtra, you know, it wasn't Dhritarashtra involvement, Yudhishthir wouldn't have gone to the gambling match, and even if he did, when he saw the situation, he wouldn't deal. And probably Duryodhana wouldn't have, it's only knowing this that he had such boldness, because otherwise, if they tried to pull anything, Bhima would so happily take his club and kill all the brothers right on the spot. So it's only because Duryodhana's knowing the qualities of Yudhishthir and how his brothers will follow that he can be as bold as he is. Because if they didn't follow, Bhima would have killed Duryodhana when he was 8 years old. Right? As soon as he got back from the, when they tried to poison him and they threw him into the Jamuna. Like that. After that, he went down and then the Nagas bit him, so balance the poison. You had vegetable poison and it was counteracted by animal poison. So then they counteracted each other, like fire and fire. So then he wasn't killed from that. And then the Nagas figured out that he was actually a distant relative. So then they gave him these pots of nectar, right? And being Bhima, he could drink so many. Most people couldn't even drink one, but he drank eight of them, right? You know, So then each one would make him as strong as, you know, 1,000 elephants. So that means he was already as strong as 2,000. So that added 8 onto it, so 10,000. So now he's as strong as 10,000 elephants. When he comes back, he could have just walked up and killed, you know, Duryodhana right on the spot. But he didn't because of Yudhishthir. Right? So they know that. They take advantage. Someone who practices niti always takes advantage of the person who follows dharma. They'll quote dharma because you'll follow it, but that's not their purpose. So when an irreligious person quotes dharma to you, you don't have to follow it if it doesn't apply to the situation, right? Because they're only using it as niti. They're not using it as dharma. They're using it as how to practically just get done whatever they like. That's all. Does this make sense? So there's a balance there. But at the same time, is that gives no rise, there is no excuse, absolutely zero excuse for a society to have thrown out respect for authority and respect for gurus, respect for sannyasis, respect for brahmins. That is inexcusable. Like that. Doesn't matter who you are. It's unexcusable. So that no one has a right to that. Even if someone misuses it, it doesn't, that's an individual. It doesn't give you a right to throw out the God-given principles. So that means within it you have to respect. So you respect the principle, the individual you may not respect, but the principle you have to. Right? But since you're dealing with the individual, you have to deal with it in accordance with what the situation is. So you have to be intelligent. Right? So this modern thing of just doing everything on emotion is very inefficient. You can't bring balance. Right? Because the only way to bring balance is then, if you're dealing on emotions, then masculine emotions have to balance feminine. But they're not doing that. So, you know, and it's not logical. So it's just an environment to taste the intensity and fullness of insecurity. That's all. So that means it's for Shudras. That's an environment for Shudras. Right? Because Shudra means one who laments. That's all. Dvijas do something about the situation. The others lament. Does that make some sense? Is this okay? Okay. Now the Vedas, I mean, now they're giving an example. Young Kavi, the son of Angiras, taught his relatives who were old enough to be fathers, and as he excelled them in sacred knowledge, he called them little sons. Moved with resentment, they asked the gods concerning the matter, and the gods, having assembled, answered, "The child has addressed you properly. For a man destitute of sacred knowledge is indeed a child, and he who teaches in the Veda is his father. For the sages have always said child to an ignorant man, and father to the teacher of the Veda." Right? So there's an example of this. Hey, why is it? He's a kid. He's, you know, why he's calling us child, right? Something like that. Neither through years, nor through white hairs, nor through wealth, nor through powerful kinsmen comes greatness. The sages have made this law. He who has learnt the Veda together with the Angas, Anuchana, is considered great by us. Right? So that's the point, is that, so here we've said that all these are considerations, but they're general considerations. Right? So age, wealth, you know, white hairs would indicate that they've done something, otherwise you don't get white hairs by doing nothing. Right? Or powerful kinsmen. These things aren't the powerful, he says powerful kinsmen, because then you've combined the thing of power and relatives. So in other words, all the other four are not comparable to knowledge. Right? But when you're dealing on the just general platform, then they have, you know, great meaning. Does all this make sense? Yes?
I have a question regarding this feet touching.
Feet touching, right? Yes. You want to know if afterwards it's all right to use your antibacterial stuff and all that. And
no, because in ISKCON we don't really do it as obeisances.
There's supposed to be obeisances, but... No, that was when he was outside, and yeah, it turns into a trip. You have to understand. One has to understand the over-external ritualization of the Western mind, right? So the touching the feet. People would go along, people would walk, and they'd come up and grab his feet. You know, they'd offer obeisances and grab his feet and great sentiment to have Prabhupada's feet and they're holding on. But Prabhupada can't walk. Because they get so much into the ritual that they forget that the ritual is a medium for exchange with a person. So the difficulty is the Western mind, the ritual becomes the law. Because it's a rule, it's something that has to be done. The people don't really matter. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like even we take the something that's considered, would be considered so democratic and so for the people, you know, of the people, by the people, for the people. The Constitution of America, which is very well written, right? You could probably say as a administrative document, it's probably the best in the world as far as creating a system that works. You would have to say the American democratic system is the best democratic system in the world for its functioning. It has the least amount of problems in one sense, the smooth running. It doesn't mean people don't make it a problem, right? But it was done to keep that. Why is it that there's the rule that you can bear arms? Because the British wouldn't allow them to bear arms. Why is it that you couldn't, why is it say, you know, freedom of religion? Because they weren't allowed that. You know what I'm saying? But there was times in there where the Americans themselves, it was capital punishment if you followed a religion different than it was locally practiced. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it was reactionary to the situation they were in. It wasn't necessarily purely positive. So it wasn't dealing so much between one individual and another. Does that make sense? So these elements are there. Because like before, you could be on your property, and the police came on your property, you could tell them to leave back in the 1800s. You know, and if they tried to bother you, you could shoot them. And you wouldn't have been against the law. Now you can't do that. Now you can't even shoot a robber that's in your property. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the thing is it's not that it's designed because of the actual balance of human nature, human life, human need and interaction, but it's a reactionary element of just one element reacting to another. So it's not the personal element isn't the strongest point. They'll try to make it sound like that, but it doesn't, because for the people, you can do anything against the people. You know what I'm saying? But so who decides it's for the people? That's the difficulty. So the lawmaker himself feels he is the supreme authority. But Manu is pointing out, no, it's Shastra is the supreme authority. It's not based on Shastra. It doesn't have any validity. You can follow it, but you know it won't give you the result because God's made the creation, therefore it's going to work that way. Does that make sense? Did we answer your question, or I got too much on a tangent and missed the point? That's okay? Okay. Yes.
Understanding the one connection, I was reading an article where Prabhupada was traveling in India by train and some fellow Hindu come to Prabhupada and wanted to take dust from Prabhupada and feed, but Prabhupada sent him away.
Yeah, because it's not that you are obliged. We're talking here relatives and that. Yeah, because what is he doing in exchange? This man you've never seen before comes up, touches your feet, goes away, you'll never see him again. He's not following your instructions, he's not going to, you know, give a donation, he's not going to surrender his life, he's not going to do anything. So what is the exchange? So it's just like, let us say you have a bag full of money and I just walk up and reach in and grab some and walk off. Is that allowed? No. You know, like that. It's not. Or I come and I have my garbage and I dump it over the fence onto your property. So that's allowed? No. There has to be, there's an exchange. So if you're a student, then you can touch. But the point is then if that was there, then every devotee would be touching this and that and the whole. How would it work? How would it function? Like that. So there's a control to make it there. The point is respect should be offered. So by offering obeisances, you get the same effect as touching the feet. So that's the point. You know, it's not the, yes.
So what should be our proper reaction when, for example, Indian family, they come to the temple and we speak with them or we serve in charanamrita just like now, because of their tradition or whatever understanding they may have, they try to touch our feet.
Pleasantly bend over and hold their shoulders so that they can't get at your feet, because it's a symptom of a humility and it's effective in keeping them from touching your feet. Or you move back a little bit, whatever works.
So even if you step back, it's not offensive towards them because.
No, it's not. They're offering their respect. That's all. But that doesn't mean because they've offered your respect, you appreciate that they've offered the respect. Does that make sense? Because the transfers of karma is real. It's not just something that we talk about, but it doesn't matter because we chant Hare Krishna. Like that. It's real. But because we chant, then you burn it off. But why have this extra stuff to burn off? We have enough of our own problems. Yeah, but then you're following her instructions, and if she doesn't, she yells at you. You know? And if you're lucky, you don't get hit with a stick.
When I was given a position of a teacher in her school, and then all these kids, they came and they paid their obeisances to me, I was also following
the same. Yeah, that's just the way it works. But there is, that's like what we said before. The following 10 persons can be students: the teacher's son, one who desires to do service, one who imparts knowledge, one who is, I mean, in other words, you're giving knowledge. So therefore, you're a student to your teacher, and they're then under you. Who's intent on filling the law? One who is pure, a person connected by marriage, friend, one who possesses the mental ability, so that means they're able to dance, so that they're there, so they're students. One who makes presents of money, one who is honest, a relative, like this. So they have to fit in this category. So a guy off the street you've never seen before is none of those. So that's why there's no obligation. Okay. Basis of seniority. Okay. The seniority of Brahmins is from sacred knowledge. That of Kshatriyas from valor. That of Vaishyas from wealth and grain and other goods. But that of Shudras alone from age. Right. So valor means, you know, you can do something. You know, stand up in a meeting, say something. Stand, you know, that. A man is not therefore considered venerable because his head is gray. Him who, though young, has learned the Veda, the gods consider to be venerable. As an elephant made of wood is an antelope made of leather, such is an unlearned Brahmin. Those three have nothing but the names of their kind. As a eunuch is unproductive with women, as a cow with a cow is unprolific, and as a gift made to an ignorant man yields no reward, even so is a Brahmin useless. Who does not know the riks, right? Who knows the Veda, right? So you hear a gift made to an ignorant person, there's no reward, right? It means you give away, you know, 10 euros to a poor person, you'll get back 10 euros. That's not a reward. Does that make sense? You give to someone who's knowledgeable, then it increases, right? If I go out and buy stock of 100 euros, and then I sit down and I sell it for 100 euros, then will I consider, yes, that was a great day? Yes? No. Like that. So that's the point, is therefore giving in charity to the ignorant is necessary because they're so ignorant they can't take care of themselves. But that's not where real rewards are. That's just the social duty, right? The reward is giving to someone who is knowledgeable in the Veda. Then it will, you know, you'll get 10,000 times return. Now that is profit, right? How many businesses you know that you can get 10,000 times profit, right? Very few. If you get 1,000, you're really doing good, you know? 100% is really good. 20 is pretty standard, right? So that's that. And then if they're knowledgeable and realized, then it's 100,000. Does that make sense? And if it's someone like Prabhupada, then there is no limit on it. You can't calculate it, right? Because it's on this that transcendental platform. Like that. Right. Okay. Gentle speech. Okay, so that's respect. So now gentle speech, right? Because these are all things that are said he had to teach to the student, right? We were saying before, is that... What is that? Personal purification, conduct, right? So this is conduct. Fire worship, the twilight devotions. So we discussed the twilight devotions, right? So now conduct. So respect is part of conduct and gentle speech. Created beings must be instructed in what concerns their welfare without giving them pain. And sweet and gentle speech must be used by a teacher who desires to abide by the sacred law. He, forsooth, whose speech and thoughts are pure and ever perfectly guarded, gains the whole reward which is conferred by the Vedanta. Right? So it means the Vedanta is giving the end of knowledge, so that means one will come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. So if one can speak nicely, that will then confer all blessings, right? Like that. Let him not, even though in pain, speak words cutting others to the quick. Let him not injure others in thought or deed. Let him not utter speeches which make others afraid of him, since that will prevent him from gaining heaven. Right? So Krishna doesn't appreciate if it doesn't go your way, and so you say something that hurts somebody or that makes them afraid, because that's not the point. The point is if you're right, then you're right, then figure out how to say it. But you have to be able to control the senses to be able to do that. That's why it's within, that's why this is trained as a brahmachari. right? Because it's part of control of the senses. This is harder, like that. Okay, so that's, yes. Yes, so then you don't say anything more.
Yeah, but let's say you have a responsible for some people, then you will be upset, but it's necessary.
But you can say, they'll be upset whether you say it nicely or not. So say it nicely. They'll get upset anyway. It's saying that you do, see, in all these things, that there's, this is what you're supposed to do. Then at some other point, it'll tell what the other person's supposed to do. Right? So just because we told here that you have to respect the authority, but there's other places that say what is an authority and how an authority should behave. So the trick is that everybody should do their duty. The problem in the modern is everybody knows everybody else's duty, right? The authorities know what the common person's duty are. The common person knows what the authority's duty are. Men can all say what women's duties are, and women can say what the men's are. But the point is does anybody know their own? Does anybody practice their own? That's the question, right? Because it says this here, then you can't use that. See, you're supposed to respect authority. No, you're supposed to behave so that you are respect. They're supposed to respect authority, so you're supposed to behave in a respect, in a way that they will want to respect you. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Just like we were saying before, the woman's supposed to follow the man should act in a way that the woman wants to follow him. Because that's her duty to follow. So it should be natural, it should be spontaneous. So that means it's his responsibility to act in a way that she wants to follow. But it's still her duty to try to follow whether that's there or not. But the point is it's, you know, if he does his duty, she does her duty, then it works. That's the point in Manu, yeah.
I have a question regarding the gentle speech.
Gentle speech.
Yeah, because, like, sometimes, I'll just give a practical example. Like, right now we moved to a new temple in Prague, and I was supposed to be leading a group of brahmacharis who were doing the constructing work and beginning all the things, and I always try to keep a distance and be kind and nice and reserved and everything. But then what happens is that they kind of misuse it because they know that anyway the reaction will always be nice and they will never get any club or anything. So then what was happening, that things were not going as we decided or as it was supposed to be. So one day I came to the temple and I completely freaked out. And my speech was definitely not gentle, and somehow or other, this one boy, he became so frightened, and afterwards it was much easier for us to work together because he knew that if he doesn't do things properly, then there will be some reaction. But of course, I didn't feel good, but like, sometimes people, they have this tendency to misuse it or have it to do about it.
Means you have two aspects here. One is that you always will start at what's the least amount. So instead of going from 0 to 100, you know, in 3.4 seconds, then we use something in between. Now, you can yell, but you can also use sarcasm, right? So that would be the next thing. Means you'd use that. Then you can use joking. You know, joking about it, you know, but lightly sarcastic. Then you can be really sharp sarcastic. If that doesn't work, then you can yell. If that doesn't work, then silence. That's worse, right? No? Yeah, so that's the, but the point is they are dependents. So dependents you can be a little stronger with. Like that. But the point is you would always be tending towards dealing gently if that works. If it doesn't, then you use something stronger. But you wouldn't just automatically be strong when there's no need to it and consider it that it's one's right, you know, because one's in charge. So that's the point here, is gentle speech is that's how you always speak. But you see, as if you can do it nicely, it's very powerful. Look how it worked for Prahlad Maharaj. You know, he always spoke gently, even though his father was not necessarily nice. Right? So that's there. So that's why these examples are there. You see, it always works. Yudhishthira is an example given there. He spoke very sweetly. He told Draupadi she was speaking atheism. Yeah. You said you're speaking like an atheist, right? Because she's saying, you know, you're righteous. You know, you lost the throne. Duryodhan is unrighteous. He has the throne. So what's the meaning of all this saying, by doing the shots, you know, that by doing good work, you get good results? So it appears that it's upside down. That's atheism, right? Because no, it's working the way it is. Duryodhan has done something in the past that he's come to that position. Yudhishthira's done something that's brought him to that. That's all. You know, so it's still working within that. Any sense? So that aspect of atheism, he told her she's an atheist, but he didn't yell at her. He just said that very pleasantly and sweetly that it's atheism. Right? Because it's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it. I mean, if you want to have fun, then you try it. Someday, if you're upset, you can say the nastiest thing, but say it very sweetly. The tone of voice and words. And you can say something really heavy, and the person will catch that heaviness, but it won't get their ego because you said it so nicely. Try it. See if it works. Nice. You'll have plenty of opportunity. Is that okay? Someone else had a hand? No? Okay. Okay. Equanimity of mind. A Brahmin should always fear homage as if it were poison, and constantly desire to suffer scorn as he would long for nectar. For he who is scorned, nevertheless, may sleep with an easy mind, awake with an easy mind, and with an easy mind walk here among men, but the scorner utterly perishes, right? So in other words, that group of brahmacharis, even though you yelled at them, they slept peacefully at night. No. Huh? No. No? But you didn't sleep peacefully.
I slept, but...
But you were saying you felt bad about it.
Because I don't like that kind of mode. Like, I don't like to deal like this with people and the devotees in general. But then I knew I was right and it was the only thing. And then I felt bad because the brahmachari, the particular one...
It's a particular one, but the other ones, you know, it's like, have you ever tried pouring water on a duck? What happens? You don't have a saying like that? Water off a duck's back?
Yes.
Right? You don't have it? A duck's back is waterproof. You can pour water on it all day and nothing will happen. So I'm sorry. Okay. So the point is that when someone criticizes you, they take on the bad quality that they criticize. Right? So you get purified. So therefore someone, you know, speaks badly, it's actually good for you. But you have to have the previous character that they've been talking about to be able to handle that. Otherwise, you'll say something back, so then you take the bad quality back. You know? Does that make sense? So, point is if one's teaching, then one has to be, but one has to be careful that it's only how much works. Now, don't think just because you yell, now next time you try it, that it'll work. It might not. You have to see the situation. Okay, study of the Vedas, the highest austerity. A twice-born man has been sanctified by the employment of the means described above in due order, shall gradually and cumulatively perform the various austerities prescribed for those who study the Veda. Right? In other words, one who's been purified by equanimity of mind, gentle speech, respect of authority, right? That's where we start, and the understanding of knowledge and its protection, chanting of the Gayatri or chanting of Japa, controlling the senses. Right? So someone who's done that, then they're qualified now to practice the austerities of their particular nature. Right? So in other words, there is qualities required to practice one's occupations. Right? Does that make sense? Like Manu gives 10 basic ones, Narad Muni gives 30, right? Because he's talking about Daivavarnashram. So much of the time we just worry about what's the ritual. But the ritual is for the person who has the character to follow the ritual. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty when we try to apply varnashram. We try to apply it as social and economic rules rather than a lifestyle for those who have the, you know, sattvic or brahminical nature. Right? Does that make sense? An Aryan must study the whole Veda together with her hasyas, performing at the same time various kinds of austerities and the vows prescribed by the rules of the Veda. Right, so here I mean the rahasyas will be the secret portions or Vedanta. So our books are always come with that. That's, you know, the books themselves are describing that, and then Prabhupada's purports are describing that. So we don't have to worry, it's a separate thing. So for us then, study of Bhagavatam, that is study of the Veda with the rahasyas, like that. But at the same time, he has to perform his duties and vows that are prescribed for him. Let a Brahmin who desires to perform austerities constantly repeat the Veda, for the study of the Veda is declared to be in this world the highest austerity for a Brahmin. Verily, that twice-born man performs the highest austerities up to the extreme extremities of his nails, who, though wearing a garland, daily recites the Veda in private to the utmost of his ability. Right? So if you want to be austere, then study and teach the Veda. Right? In other words, you know, study Prabhupada's books, teach Prabhupada's books, preach. That's the greatest austerity there is. There isn't one. And so he's saying here, it is such an austerity up to the extreme of the nails, right? Because the nails are dead. So up to that point, you're that austere. Your whole body up to the end of your nails is engaged in austerity, even though you're wearing a garland and sitting in a nice situation, if you're studying and teaching the Veda. Right? Does that make sense? Because sometimes you say, oh, you're sitting on the nice seat, doing this and that. But it doesn't matter. The guy's totally austere. Does that make sense? Like that. This is the... So that's why are we going through this? Because we may say, well, what's this got to do with management? This has got everything to do with management, because you have rules on your books, you know, that are going against these principles. Why? Because nobody knows them. You know, oh, the guru shouldn't sit in a big seat, or shouldn't have this, or shouldn't be that, or shouldn't... These are all against the Shastra. What's the big deal? He sits on the seat. He's giving you God. You can't get better than that. But we worry about, oh, that cost, you know, 100 euros. You know? That's not... Prabhupada got that complaint. It was in the penthouse suite of the Hong Kong Hilton. Right? So you're not going to get too much better than that. So that was the top floor. It was the whole floor, right? And so the reporter's asking him, you know, you're the guru spiritual, why are you staying, you know, here? And he says, if this building was made out of solid gold, it wouldn't be enough. Because what the guru's giving is God. You can't, you know, there's no bargain for that. You know? So it's not an excuse, but the point is that's the reality. And we can say, oh yes, but that's, and then sideline it by some mundane argument. You know, oh, but they're not Prabhupada. Who said they're Prabhupada? Nobody said they're Prabhupada. Like that. This is just the position of guru. Like that. This is the position of authority. And as I mentioned before, when there was the respect for authority, means I remember we were brahmacharis. How much respect basically you give to in general, means maybe in private or some individual, but when it, like let's say, goes into a big temple, a guru, we probably give as much or more respect to our temple president than we give to gurus nowadays. Like that. So it's really going out of the way how you would deal with sannyasis. That was basically how we dealt with the temple president. You know, they gave all the classes, did the kirtans, whatever they said we did. All the maha went to them first. Everything like that. They even had some furniture, right? They had a desk, right? Nobody else had any furniture. Mm-hmm. The only furniture in the temple was the altar, Prabhas Vyasasan, you know, the display cabinet for the books, and the temple president's desk. That was his, right? I didn't say chair because he sat on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. You know? Don't want to get too out of like that. So like that, second initiated devotees, they were Brahmins. They were all respected. Everybody respected them. You know, nowadays, you know, I've seen, walk into some of these big temples, walk in and out, people are there walking around, they won't even notice you there. Like that. Yes. Well, study, well, I mean, for us, study means Bhagavatam, right? That is our book, right? So, because that is the essence of the Veda. So then the Bhagavatam and any book that's, in support of that, which means Bhagavad Gita, you know, which gives the foundation, how you can, you know, what the principles that you study it, Chaitanya Charitamrita, how the Bhagavatam is applied as a lifestyle for us, you know, as preachers, as Gaudiyas. Nectar Devotion explains the devotional process that the Bhagavatam is explaining. You know, in any of those literatures by the Acharyas that are in support of those, because that's basically what you're going to get. Everything's going to be in pursuance of those books, right? So that's where Prabhupada picked those. Or the Upanishads, the Upanishad. But everything's coming in line with that. So Prabhupada, from what I had always heard, recommend 2 hours a day reading. So that's ideal. You know, if someone can't read, then they should do practical work. But if they can read and study, then they should do it. I think it was in Zurich. You know, I think back in the 80s. Maybe it was even 90s. I'm not sure when they made the switch. But it was, you know, in its day, you know, the top temple in that category. I'm not sure what they were, a medium temple or a small or large, whatever they were. But they were always the top in that category in book distribution. So they would go out from 10 in the morning till 6 in the evening. And then at some point, I think Hari Keshan, you know, was discussing and found out nobody read books. So then he made the rule from 10 to 12 they would study and then go out from 12 to 6. So they went out 6 hours instead of 8 hours doing book distribution. And 2 hours they studied. But they found that they actually distributed more books in that 6 hours than they used to before in 8 hours because they were more inspired and knew more of what they were doing. Like that. Prabhupada said his only complaint about his disciples, they don't read his books. So like that. That's considered a good. But those are our books. So when you say here Veda, understand for us that means Bhagavatam. You know, it means Veda here will mean what are the books of your line. Right? So traditionally people before would study the Veda and then whatever was the specific, you know, angas of their particular line. You know, the Veda and Ayurveda, or Veda and astronomy, or a Veda and ritual, Veda and Purana, like that. So for us then the paravidya, transcendental knowledge is the prominent. So of Vedanta, then for us, then the Bhagavatam will be the main. That what Jiva Goswami established in his Tattva Sandarbha. That study of the Bhagavatam, that is the study of the Vedanta. Is that okay? Done? Yes.
How would you see the situation of a person like Iskon state, especially in the West, like how to increase this respect for this traditional culture?
To start to discuss it, that's all. All you have to do is discuss it. See, basically speaking, I'm saying this strongly here because we're dealing with leadership. The general devotee doesn't have any problem with offering respect. He may not because he hasn't been trained in it. But the problem is not the general devotee. The problem is the leadership. It's a leadership that's worried about authority, because then the temple president's worried about, you know, because the GBC somehow has been, you know, he can't worry about, though he'd like to worry about it. But then you have gurus and sannyasis. So then, you know, who's the authority here? Because everyone's trying to be an authority, then it's a problem. So this balance of what one is an authority in and how that works, then it's there. Because one is dealing on the spiritual platform, one's dealing in administration. Right? So there's no overlap. So what's the problem? Like, who's the authority, the mother or the father? Right? They're both the authorities, but they deal in different areas. You know, when it's coming to you're going to eat your dinner, who's the authority? Right? Your mother, because she deals with dinner. Right? If you don't listen to your mother, then the father may come in and explain how it's really good for your health to eat your dinner. Right? So then, you know, in the same way as when it comes to management and stuff, the temple president is in charge. That's it. It's not the GBC or the guru or the sannyasi. They're dealing with the spiritual elements, that your personal development, your commitment to the Sankirtan mission is being cultivated and you're practicing it. And the temple president is seeing that the schedule is organized as such so that you, in the best possible way, are, according to those teachings, engaging yourself. Right? So each one's not using the other. It's just part of one process. You have to personally develop, but we also, one, need encouragement, and two is if it's organized, you can do much more stuff. One person could do a certain amount. If you organize as a group, you can do much more. Does that make sense? So the thing is, it's not, you know, president, you know, authority against, you know, sannyasis and guru and GBC. They're different categories. But if people don't understand these categories, that's why we're going through this, then they'll think it's one thing. Authority means one thing. You say something, someone's got to do it. No, but it's you're saying it a different thing. Temple president is saying, this is the schedule. This is what you're going to follow. This is what you do at this time and that. That's what he's dealing with. While the, you know, sannyasi, the guru, they're supposed to be dealing with, you know, chanting and association of devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, worship the deity, you know, that the proper, you know, humility, tolerance, all these different things, or which are your personal practices. Does that make sense? That's what you're dealing with. So they're different areas. So the temple president is managing that you practice those things in your life. It's not a separate thing. But because we're not seeing this balance, we just think it's just management. So everyone's just managing. Does that make sense? But there's a difference. Does that make sense? You know. So in other words, what's happening is you have the father and the mother, and so the, you know, the mother deals in a certain way and the father in another, you know, to see that the standards are there, everything's set. But, you know, what you're doing is in the house is set by the mother. So what's happening now is your top management is trying to be the mother, but they won't do the duties of the mother. They won't let the mother do the duties of the mother. So then they have high outside nannies and other people come in to do those duties. And even they don't have the authority, so you have to set up an office to, you know, work these things out and have committees to work out how to take care of the child. You know? But the point is the father in this case is trying to be the mother. They don't understand that the father's in a higher position. So that's why it's a mess, because no one's being the mother. But everybody's being the mother. Right? Because the problem is we take it management is the top. It's not the top. Right? The ultimate authority means the ultimate managerial authority means what's the ultimate authority of management? Is it management? Is management the ultimate authority of management? No. What's the ultimate authority of management? The Veda. So that means the ultimate authority of management is to see that the philosophy and lifestyle of the Bhagavatam is being applied by the managers of the society. That's the meaning of the ultimate authority managerial authority. It doesn't mean they're the managers on top of all the other managers. It means they're the ones that sees that management works according to the direction of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That's the ultimate authority. Otherwise, why is it the Brahmin is respected over the Kshatriya? Because the Kshatriya is the administrator, right? And the point is his knowledge is what gives him that position. So the position of the ultimate managerial authority is that of having the greatest amount of knowledge, Krishna conscious knowledge and application, and therefore they see that those who are doing the practical application are doing so according to the directions. Right? That's why we're studying in this form, because then we see its natural form. This is how God gave it. Right? Because it's direct. This is parampara. Vishnu to Brahma, Brahma to Bhrigu, and Bhrigu now to the sages. So it's not that, you know, and it doesn't go out of date, as it's already been mentioned. The Veda is eternal, so these instructions are eternal. They don't go out of date just because people feel like it. Is that okay? Austerity alone and study by two.
Yeah.
So then?
How to cultivate
study by two.
Yeah.
So you want to know is who turns the page because you're both sitting there or something, you know, because if you go and they go and it's just, no, I'll turn the page. No, I'll turn the page. No, I'll turn. Once on an air, getting on a flight? No, it doesn't matter. Okay? So study by two means if you're studying where others are studying, then there's a tendency that you'll be inspired by them studying, right? Or you can discuss things, right? Doesn't mean because you're studying by two because they went to sleep, now you are inspired to fall asleep. You understand? Okay? Yeah. Yes. He's in the position, we still respect that. The point is the quality, it means the quality, someone who has the qualities takes up the position, right? So him having the qualities, you can't cultivate the qualities for him, can you? No, he has to cultivate the qualities himself. But in cultivating our qualities, we respect the position, right? In other words, being in the position, so it's like here it says, one who has, right? A twice-born man who has been sanctified by the employment of the above means, right? Means the of cultivating respect, just taking that as the example, cultivating respect. So someone who's sanctified, purified himself because he's cultivated respect of seniors, shall gradually and cumulatively perform the various austerities prescribed for those who study the Veda. So now he should take up those duties, right? So now for us, we're respecting that authority. So what position is that for us? We're cultivating those qualities. But they've taken up the position means they're supposed to already have these qualities, right? Or at least be cultivating them. So now they've come to the position of duty. So it's two different positions. We're doing it for our own personal benefit. They're doing it because supposedly they've been benefited and now they can apply it. So now if they haven't benefited themselves, we still get the benefit for dealing properly with them. But as I said, if what they're saying doesn't actually apply to what is supposed to be done, one's technically not obliged to follow it. Right? But if one followed it because the authority said, one's not wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like in New York, you had the Bali Mardan. He was off the wall for a little while there with his, you know, Miss Toyota, who was not actually Miss Toyota. You know, she was, yeah, whatever. So then the devotees were following. So the temple was prospering because the devotees are doing their duties. But in a conversation when he was sitting with some other, you know, senior men and all that, he said he wouldn't have been able to do that with the Mayapur devotees. Meaning the Mayapur devotees would have figured out something's wrong here and this is stupid, you know. But the point is if you can figure it out or not, and if you follow it or don't follow it based on it's not right, it doesn't. All of this you'll get benefit because it's all based on Shastra. The point is whatever the position, it should be based on Shastra. Because they make the idea, well, then we should just blindly follow. Who said blind? Any time in here did blind come up? Have we come across it once? No. So blind following is never a Vedic principle. Blind following, that's Europe and the serfs. So blind following, that is the European thing. That's just, you know, without, because, and it's not even blind because, you know, if you don't follow it, you'll get killed. That's all. So blind means it's bogus and you're following it. But when it's not bogus, it's authorized, then because you're doing it doesn't mean now you're a blind follower, you're just a sheep or a cattle or... No, you've made the personal decision with your intelligence and other people, that means there's a group of you who are intelligent and made the decision. But anything that means people are working together, then they, oh, you're a group, you know, the old boys club or this club or that club. But the point is maybe that's called community. You know what I'm saying? Because the committee should be what? All like-minded people? No, people from all different backgrounds, different opinions, so that the committee can't work. Because if the committee doesn't work, there's no authority. If there's no authority, there's no problem, because the real problem is authority, right? So if you remove authority, then all problems are gone. Right? But unfortunately, it starts here with authority. That's all we've discussed up to now is authority. Manu. You know? So that's the difficulty, is that we say community, but we'll make a committee that nobody's the same. And we pick it so it will have opposing opinions. If you're the president and you have an authority, they will put people on that council that oppose your way of thinking. Why? So you can't do anything. Of course, they can't do anything either. Right? It's called, in logic, I think, caviling. Yeah, where you don't present anything of positive. All you do is attack the other person's position. That's all. You don't have any position yourself. You just attack theirs. That's another one. Because we mentioned Jalpa and Chala. So that's the third one. You just attack whatever they say. Whatever they say, you just attack it. That's all. You know what I'm saying? So that's not community. So if there's no community in the committee, there won't be any community bigger than that. Right? Ram was a righteous king, his kingdom was righteous. Yudhishthira was a righteous king, his kingdom was righteous. So if the committee is not righteous, the community won't be righteous. It's direct, it's science. But, of course, the mode of ignorance doesn't appreciate that. Does that make sense? Did it work at Nuremberg? Did it work at Nuremberg? Yeah? That makes sense? No? It's been that old? My God. Okay. The Nuremberg trials for the Nazis? And what did they say? I was just following orders. So in their mind, being Germans, I was just doing what I was supposed to do. So in their mind, it was an excuse. Did it work? No. So the point is that if you don't know, he said, you're doing, then you get the benefit of that, but it doesn't mean that there won't be the reaction for the part that's not right. You know what I'm saying? So if you have responsibility, then you either adjust it. You know, in other words, what is it that the authority wants you to do? Right? So the principle of that, get done, but do it in the proper way. Does that make sense? So they say, okay, we have to increase the Sankirtan, we have to bring in more money or something like that. So they may say ways to do it, but if you feel that those ways aren't right, you do it in the ways you feel are right, and just make sure you increase the money. And so if you've increased the money by doing it properly, how will they complain? And if they do complain, you say, hey, no, this is the way it works. But generally speaking, nowadays, I don't think you'd have so much problem because it's very rare that they get involved. It means they'll tell you what to do, but they won't follow up. So you can basically do what you need. Does that make sense? Kind of. Under meaning that he would do programs that are in cooperation with the temple president, not that the temple president's his authority, because the sannyasi at any moment can just walk out the door.
Yeah, I understand this, but there is also the thing because of, I don't know, visiting for a few days to the year, and then I understand that there is some position that they speak together and make some plans how to develop the
But that's then you tell them. You tell them you don't like it. But you tell them why. And show them practically how that's not going to work for the proper development. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time is, it may be that they see something you don't see. And so there's some aspect of why they're independent, because you do things in a certain way that doesn't allow them to do something that they know could work. Right, but if it was done cooperatively, that's where it would work nicely. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that just because someone is the temple president, they're automatically right. You know, because in this condition, it's what if somebody above you is telling you something you don't feel is right, but it could be also you're not automatically right either. So that also has to be there. So you have to see what they say at the same time as you express what you feel, you know? And so then let them convince you if it's otherwise. If they really feel it's up, let them convince you. But be open for that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if it is good and like this, then be open to it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that there's always this thing is he's under. No, that's not under. It's just a matter they cooperate with, so that it's because the president makes these decisions on schedules and timings and things like that, that's the element of, you know, cooperating with. So that's what you're under, but you're not under him as a person. You know what I'm saying? He's the manager authority there, but he's not the spiritual, the top spiritual. You know what I'm saying? He is as a person. He's the maybe the yatra leader, but he is a person. And a sannyasi is always going to be superior to a grihastha or a brahmachari. If the temple president's a sannyasi, then you could say, now there's some equalness there. You know, and maybe even a superiority, because this one is managing, but they both have knowledge. But if the other one has greater knowledge, then you have to see. That's why all these things are there. So there's always the element that the temple president is a person, and the temple president is a position. But we'll always take it that it's as a position. But he's the sannyasi. It doesn't, if there's a GBC man who's a grihastha, and there's a sannyasi who's not a GBC, as far as ashram goes, that sannyasi is senior to that GBC man. And if he makes some statement about his personal practices in life, he would do well to listen if he wants to actually function within the, you know, devotional process. But as far as, you know, your managerial authority, then your GBC will be higher than your sannyasi. You have to, one has to understand you can have both of these at once. That's the thing, is in the Vedic, you can respect both at once. Right? He's the Brahmin, he's respectable, but he's come onto the road, there's a lady there, he can move for the lady, because ladies are respectable. Right? So you have all these different things, you have to know where their position is. Does that make sense? So there's always this overlap. Westerners don't like overlap. They like neat little boxes with little lines that draw between one another and little graphs, and everything's like cool. But the point is where's the person in that? The temple president is a person. He has his personal life. So as a president, yes, but as a individual practitioner within ISKCON, then he's junior to the sannyasi. Like that. So you have to balance these two. But we want to say it, if I'm in charge, I'm in charge across the board. And then they'll always say, no, we're sannyasi, so across the board. Why, everything has to be absolute. That's why I keep making these snide comments about Machiavellian, because that's what it is. It's not Vedic. Vedic is balance. You know, like that. Machiavellian is all this way or all that way. But that's not balance. Balance is in the middle. So it means you respect them for something, they respect you for something. Because if you can't do that, then you as a living entity can't respect another living entity. Because they also have God in their heart. They're also pure spirit soul. And that has to be respected. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to get to. We respect an ant by not stepping on him. Right? He's walking across the road. You know, that's how much road he needs. It's his right to walk across the road also. So I'll step over, not because I want to step on that spot and I'm bigger than the ant, so it's my right. No, I step over. Like that. So we're trying to get to that, but we can't respect, work it out between gurus, temple presidents, sannyasis. We can't, senior devotees, Prabhupada disciples. Because everybody wants to be the absolute authority, with no, you know, in the position of Varna, with no consideration of the personal development. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is we can't deal with more things, more than one thing at once. So even though the mind, yeah, does that make sense? So we have to be able to see what's the balance there. And that we have to be able to work out. You know, in other words, if someone's independently doing something, that's not allowed, because the temple president is the authority in the yatra, how it's defined. Right? But at the same time, is there must be a balance there. Is, you know, why are they there? Why would they act independently? What's the reason? You know? Does that make sense? Like that. Is that okay? Yeah. So in other words, the leadership has to be able to balance all these things. Because the idea is leadership means the most qualified people. And so the most qualified people should be able to do these things. You know, and if they can't work it out themselves, then by discussing with others of, you know, an equal or senior position, then they should be able to come to some proper conclusion. Right? Then you can work something out. Like that. Because otherwise, just by managerial, try to put this one into that one, then what we do is we break all the social rules, right? At the same time, as the same people who are breaking the social rules are talking about community. That doesn't go together. You can't destroy community in Varna and then say you're cultivating community in ashram. It doesn't work. They go together. The person is the ashram. His occupation is the Varna. So that's the point, is that by doing things in Varna, you can leave the person out of it. You know, but at the same time, we talk people. And you know, so it's contradictory. The whole system is fallacious. Right? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't support itself. So it's totally illogical. Is that okay? Yeah. So that means as an individual, you can make this decision and you can work properly. That's the whole beauty of Krishna consciousness. Even if you just do it properly, you'll go back to Godhead, even if nobody else does. It's not dependent upon anybody else. That's what's so nice about it. Well, other things are. Material things are. But spiritually, no. Is that okay? That, oops, that's break time.